much. Before I let Anna come up, just a few words regarding our mayor seminar last week. It was really a time when I put a lot of work and a lot of thought and a lot of prep into having that seminar, but it wasn't just me. It was us together. And for example, Margie, the food was awesome. You know, so even me on a keto diet, I was able to have cheese and meat and all that. So it was a blessing, you know, to just be there and see so many hands, so many people be there just to allow the families who are present to be blessed. And I know that we cannot fix every single marriage in 3 hours once a year, but at least what I want to start is a conversation that people can discuss, can talk, and ask questions, and just pray for the next step for each and every marriage. Whether you've been married 60 years or 6 months, there's always more work to be done, and there's always hope in the Lord that our marriages can improve. So thanks again for everyone who'd been there or prayed for us, even though you were not physically there, but I know you prayed for that seminar, and pray for the next step. We're not sure. Probably in the fall, we'll have a follow-up. The very night of that seminar, I went to bed, and I preached all night long to myself in sleep. I woke up with the notes for my next mayor seminar. That's how my brain is, like, I couldn't disconnect. But I have notes for my next seminar, you know. It's on trust, how to restore trust. You know, I can even give you the 3 points of that. Anyway, so thanks again. And one more announcement. I may not have sent invitations to Right Now Media to every single person. I know I haven't. I've sent about 60 people from our church, but probably I missed here and there someone. If you did not receive an invitation to make your own account for Right Now Media, please email me and I will send you one. We have no limitations. Anyone who is associated with our church can receive his or her own invitation. So just let me know. If you didn't get yours, let me know. There are still like 45 pending invites. So most of you have not even, I mean, it's like 10 people accepted invitations yet. So they're waiting for you guys. Just click accept and go make your account, okay? Not in mind, I'll let my beautiful wife to come up here. Come. I'm like one of those pastors. It's hard to let go. It's my pulpit. Okay.
Good morning. It's exciting to be here. I don't know if any of you have comprised 40 years of experience in 40 minutes, but I will give it a try this morning. And my prayer is that at the end of today, you would not see me, but see the Lord's faithfulness through my life. So I'll start. Long time ago, in a land far, far away, there was a baby girl born, and her name was Anna. This is her story. Actually, Anna Maria, and that is actually a good addition because I'm going to touch on that. This is her story, but rather God's story through her life. Each story is valuable because each of us is unique. God has made us different, and there has not been another you until this day, nor is ever going to be one. So that is something, one of the points that I want you to take home with you after the 40-minute talk. First off, can everyone hear me? Yes? Good. I will start with the meaning of my name. So Anna means grace or mercy or the one upon whom the favor of the Lord rests. I really connect and resonate with the meaning of my name. I love grace and mercy, and I feel like the favor of the Lord has rested upon my life. But Maria means bitterness, and I have had my share of that as well, and I will touch on that. I was born in a family of 6 children in Romania in a communist country. Now, some of you know a little bit about what a communist country is about, but some of you may not. So what I will tell you is that my mom was 24 years old, and she had her newborn baby, and after 6 weeks, she had to go back to work, else there was no work for her. So the other alternative would be to put me in a daycare, like Adi was, for example, for the whole week, and only 6 days, and see me just over the weekend, right? And there were so few places, available spots, that she couldn't find one. So she ended up sending me to the countryside to live with my grandparents. Now, back in those days, there were no cell phones, not even landlines. So the only landline in the village where my grandparents were living was with the mayor. So my mom had to call the mayor and say, I'm going to come tomorrow on this train, such and such, so that the mayor would send someone to my grandfather. He would get the carriage ready, go to the railway station and pick up the newborn and whatnot. So it was quite an adventure for my mom to come visit, right? So she only probably came once a year to see me. She had two more kids at home. I'm born in 78. My brother is in 79. My sister is in 80. My other brother is in 81. So we're like 1 year apart. She was a busy mom and working in the same time. So I remember when I was about 2 years old, she came to visit, and I asked my grandmother, who is this lady? Because I didn't know my mom, right? I was raised by my grandparents. So my grandma said, well, this is your mother. So she had to explain that she gave birth to me. I don't know how much I understood at that moment, right? But at least I knew this was my mother. Now, when I was about 4 years old, my mom came and picked me up from the countryside to visit my siblings back in Bucharest, the capital of Romania. Now, by this time, I knew she was my mother. She came, you know, a couple more times or whatnot, but I've never met my brother or my sister. So I went to their home, and at nighttime, I asked my mom, so aren't these kids going to their houses? Like, why are they here? And they say, well, this is your brother, Mihai, and this is your sister, Andrea, and this is where they live. So I got to know my immediate family. I was really loved by my grandparents, but I felt like I was missing out on my immediate family and a sense of belonging. Where did I fit? Kind of a thing. So this is a funny story. I was 5 years old. My sister was only two at the time. So one day, she wet her pants. And my mom's like, oh, look at her. She's so cute and this and that. And, you know, like, this is just an accident. And so she was really affectionate towards my sister. So because I've never received that affection, at nighttime, 2 a.m, I needed to go to the washroom. I did not. I wet my pants because I wanted the same affection that my sister received. And lo and behold, my mom waking up at 2 a.m, and she's like, oh, you're 5 years old, and you did this, and I get all the, you know, like. So I'm saying all this just to give you a glimpse of how I grew up, because who we are today is very much of who we have been in the past, and we learn through our experiences, and God meets us in those particular places. So when I was 7 years old and I was at school and whatnot, my father was supposed to pick me up from school, and he totally forgot. So first day of school, all the kids have their parents pick them up, and mine didn't show up. And we just moved in a new area. I knew nobody. I vaguely remember how we walked on the way to school in the morning. So here I am, a seven-year-old, and I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to get home today? In a communist country, nobody keeps track of, you know, attendees and whatnot. So the teacher thought that my parents had come and picked me up, and she never worried. She never checked on me to see, you know, if anyone picked me up from the schoolyard. So I started walking home, and finally my father met me on the way back. My point is, growing up, I had a sense of I'm lacking affection and I'm lacking safety. And if you know me today, these are two of my main needs. I need affection and I need to know I am safe. And I have found that in the Lord, as you'll see later. But growing up, there was a huge need and a huge gap in my life. The father figure, I'll give you the father figure and the mother figure. In a communist country, you grow up with a lot of needs. So my father was working day in, day out, always had the stress of providing for his family, and he never had a good example in his family either. His father left when he was 14, and he had to start working to support his other two sisters and help his mom out. So he had no good examples, but all his frustrations, he would pour them up on us, the kids, and on my mom. So growing up, I've never heard a good word, and I kid you not, one good word from my father towards my mom or towards us. So just to give you an example, I had to do my A's. I was probably 5 at the time. And because my A's were not oval enough for him, he bruised all my back because I wasn't perfect. So those were the kind of expectations that I grew up with. He was also very legalistic. You could wear no nail polish or, you know, jewelry or not even pants or, you know, sleeveless dresses or whatnot. He had all these kinds of rules, but he never really explained the whys of it. So I was at the countryside, and one of the neighbors did my fingernails with red nail polish. My father showed up, and he said, "You want red nail polish? Here's what I'm going to do for you. You put your hand in the doorpost, and I slammed the door on your hand, and then you will have red fingernails." Imagine a 5-year-old. How do you grasp all, like, what is going on in this world kind of a thing? But in the father figure, besides being a really tough person and frustrated and overly jealous, he wanted to divorce my mom because my mom had a haircut and she looked beautiful. And surely my mom wanted to look beautiful to impress other men, didn't she? When she was so busy, right, going to work all the time, caring for 5 children at that time, doing all the cooking, all the washing, all the parent-teacher conferences, all, everything my mom did. But in my father's eyes, she was trying to please other men. It didn't make any sense to us, but this is who my father was. On the other side, he knew the scriptures. So he could quote you verse by verse, by heart. So growing up, I was probably 8 or 10 at the time, and I said, if Christians are like that, I don't ever want to be a Christian. Because he knew all the right words. He had the truth, right? But it was such a tough truth, and there was no grace to balance it with. His whole behavior for us growing up was not a good testimony. That is for sure. Now, my mom, I told you a little bit of my mom already, but she did have a faith. And whenever she was not working the night shift on a Saturday or all day on Sunday, she would take us to church. So I remember when I was visiting, she would take us to church and she would read to us at times. Or in the communist country, you won't have, we wouldn't have electricity all the time. All of a sudden, boom, no light. So what my mom would do, she would put the candles out and she would start singing hymns to us. So I still recall some of the hymns that she was singing to us when we were growing up. And the seeds of faith were starting to grow a little bit here with a verse from Psalm 23, like Ari was praying this morning, actually, or with one of the hymns that I would hear here, or one of the Christmas stories that I would hear at church, right? So I started to know more and more and learn a little bit more about God. But when I was 12 years old, I remember there was a significant Sunday when I heard one verse, and I will read it from you. Actually, 2 verses from Ecclesiastes 12. I have a lot of verses, and Adi said, just so you know, you probably won't have time to go through all of them, so I'll do my best to kind of, you know, comprise everything. So imagine a 12-year-old hearing these verses. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each of us may receive what is due to us for the things done while we were in the body, whether good or bad. So I got to church, and I realized God is the judge. So my father was like overly, you know, judgmental and critical on all our behavior. and I had to be perfect kind of a thing. And now I get to church and I hear, well, all that you do will be judged one day by God. And that wasn't really what attracted me to God yet. I got to 14 years old, and I said, God, I know so many things about you. I've heard all these stories about Samson and David and Nehemiah and Ezra. Like I grew up in the church after I moved to Bucharest, right, when I was 6 years old. So I would go to church on a regular basis. Plus, one of my cousins, after we moved to this new area, we bumped into each other not knowing she's my cousin. So we start talking about families and this and that, and she said, oh, but my mom told me about a lady, Tina, that she knows, and maybe it's your mom. So we had our moms meet, and then we figured it out. We're cousins. So we hanged out a little bit more, and we were playing, you know, outside. And I started going to her church. And Sunday school there was amazing. So to this day, I remember my Sunday school teacher and the way she was just pouring her wisdom and her love on us. So even though I would hear verses like these, that God is your judge and he would judge everything that you do and you got to obey the commandments and whatnot, I would also feel the love. So that really drew me towards Christ. So as I was saying, 14 years old, I'm like, God, I know a lot about you. I don't feel like I know you. Like, I know my mom, for example, and I appreciate her. And I know what she requires of me. I know what she likes. I know what she dislikes. I have a relationship with my mom. But if truly you are my creator, like I've been hearing all these years, would you make yourself known to me in a real way, in a very personal way? So I went to church next Sunday, and this lady that I told you about shared a story with us at the Sunday school. And she said, there was this guy, and he was a Christian, and he went to the army service, and he loved God, but all his other comrades, or whatever they call themselves being in the army service, they would mock him, and they would say, oh, you're young, but you're not drinking, and you're not smoking, and you're not sleeping around, and you're missing on all your life because you're a Christian. And he kept saying, well, actually, I found real life, abundant life in Christ. Let me share about this with you. Some would listen, but most of them wouldn't. Well, one day they went on a, we call it a permission, so they would go away and most of them would get really drunk. Basically, that's what they did on their permission time. He went with them, but he never got drunk. However, about like 3 a.m. or something, they thought, oh, this Christian guy, what can we do, you know, to make him feel bad? So they beat him up like really bad, like bruised him all over, left him on the ground. Like they just wanted to show their repulse towards this person. He woke up in the morning because finally he could stand up, I guess. And he asked God, God, how can I show love to these people? So he felt like God said, go back to the quarters and polish all their shoes and arrange all their uniforms in order. So when they came back and they saw this, they said, surely this Christian guy, there must be something real to him. Nobody, after you treat him so badly, so poorly, so viciously, would turn back and do something good for you. So that morning, it became so clear to me that this is how I treated Christ through my sin. He deserved nothing from me, kind of a thing, but he had to die for me. So his sacrifice became real to me. I felt his love in such a way because all I have given Christ was evil things, right? But what he came back to give me was his sacrifice on the cross for me. So that morning as we were praying at the end, I felt like the Lord said, Anna, if you were the only person in the whole wide world, I would still have died for you. And that love grabbed my heart. It wasn't all the judgment and truth and this and that, but that love, I would have still died for you. And I said, yes, Lord, I want you and I need you. So the verse that they used that morning was, you probably all know it, John 1:12. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And I felt that morning like, Anna, you are not here because of a husband's will or a human descent. You are here because I have created you. And that is what gripped my heart. When I left the church that morning, I can still recall it. So it was April of 1992. It was spring out there, and I felt like all the birds were trilling and twittering so much more beautifully, just for me, kind of a thing. Who was it that prayed? I think it was Joan that prayed for the nature this morning. That's how I felt. I was smiling to everyone. I felt like this burden came off my shoulders. I was God's. I was not only my mom's and dad's, which was not a very good heritage to that point, but I also was God's child. And he had given me a new identity in him. I started reading the Bible. I think that was the first thing that I realized after I was born again, that even though I knew many things, I knew so little, right? So I started reading, I don't know, half an hour a day. I didn't even know when the time would pass. I kept reading the Bible, and I would ask the Lord a question, and in my Bible reading, let's say 2 weeks later, he would remind me what I asked, and also give me the exact answer from the scripture. So I started growing in my faith and adding more to my growth. There was one particular verse that I really loved, and it touched my heart. I must have been probably 15 at the time. Well, Proverbs 23:26 says, "My son," but I took it as my daughter as well. "My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes delight in my ways." And it was so precious when I read this verse, and it was like the Lord said, "Anna, give me your heart. Not just your attention at times. Give me all your heart. And may your desires be focused on me." So I'm trying to get, to give you kind of like a chronological journey. 16 was a very important age for me. When I was 16, I was visiting with my aunts, and I found one of their journals. Now, I know Adi has a very sad story about the journal. Actually, let me trace back, because I jumped over 15, which was very important. Met this guy over there. So maybe I should mention it. So I would just keep up with this story. So I was 2 weeks after I turned 15, there was this group of young people, and you've heard the story, right? Like, we would get together every Saturday, and we always had this idea of going out and use our time together for evangelism. So we would invite our non-Christian friends to play basketball or handball or ping pong or tennis or whatnot, right? So they would see our interactions and wonder, what is different with these people? Like, I want what they have, and obviously we had Christ, right? So that's what happened to Adi. Well, I kid you not. So first time we get to meet each other, like in cartoons or in movies, you know, like the electrical attraction, that was it. It was love at first sight. But to me, impossible love, because I was 15 and he was 23. Now, tracing back actually to 14 years old, after I gave my life to Christ, something major also happened. I prayed for two particular things when I was 14. I prayed that God would give me a house or a home of my own one day, because I guess I was hurting so much in my actual house that I was growing up, that I wanted to make sure one day I would be away from here. So it was kind of a selfish request. And in a communist country, it's hard to have a house or a home of your own. And my mom and dad, they already had 5 children at the time. Who are they going to help get a house? And like, what kind of a job am I going to... So anyways, 14 years old, I'm already thinking, one day I will be married, I want my own house. So that's what I prayed, one thing. And the other thing I prayed for was a husband that would be a pastor. Because, again, selfishly, I'm like, all these people that pretend to be Christians, they don't live as if they are Christians. So I was kind of protecting myself. If I ask for a pastor, at least the pastor has to get up there every Sunday and he has to prepare and bring in the Word of God and pray more and fast more. So I had more chances of being happy and my children to be happy. Because the marriages I was looking around, like my mom's and dad, they didn't have a good marriage. They were not happy together. They were not doing things together. It was a bad place to be. All my aunts and uncles and neighbors, like people would get drunk and beat their wives up. And like I didn't have one good marriage that I could look up to. So that's what I said when I was 14. God, now I know you and I can pray like with my whole heart. So this is what I'm asking for you, to give me a house and give me a husband that would be a pastor. And because I was praying like with faith and whatnot, one day I said previously my father wanted a divorce and whatnot. So I remember kneeling by the bed and saying, Lord, this is the only father I've got. He's probably the worst father that I could ask for, but he's the only one I got. If there's any way of keeping him home, please do that. And the Lord did keep him home. And we have a good relationship with my dad now, jumping 40 years after, right? Like, the Lord is faithful. And this is the whole thing about today. It's not about us. It's about him and his faithfulness in our lives. Okay, so after I pray, 1 year later, I meet Adi. For 8 months, I was so mean to him. I cannot explain how mean I was to him. I wanted to push him as far as I could. Because all my devotion, I wanted it to be focused on the Lord, right? I wanted all my desires to be focused upon him. I would go on mission trips, and I would do evangelism. I would do worship in our church. I was involved with the kids, and I'm like, I don't have time for a relationship. And this is not the time. I'm 16, right? So finally, I couldn't ignore it anymore. He was always there in the back of my mind, right? Like, no matter how much you try to ignore something, if it's like that Chinese drop, you know, it's like it's all water drop, it's always there, and eventually you have to acknowledge it's there. So it was kind of the same with me. So when I was 16, yes, I guess you were. So I couldn't ignore it anymore. So yes, it's my story, but I told the Lord I would not have chosen it, but that's what you've given me. So I had to say yes. Well, had to. When I was 16, he proposed to me, and he said, I will wait for you, but I know for sure that you are the girl I want to marry. And I said, I had been praying prior to that, right? And I did say yes. And, well, he did have to wait for 3 more years, and I got married at 19. But still, I knew for sure at 16 who I was going to marry. And there was a total sense of peace when I prayed about my husband. Now, mind you, if I could have married at 16, I would have done it. But I think my mom would have freaked out a little bit, because she said, first you finish high school, then you finish your university, and then you are going to marry. So my mom had other plans, obviously, for me. 16 years old, I get and find those journals. And this was a crucial moment in my life. I know you're not supposed to read other people's journals, okay? I know that is not it. But they were going to throw them away. So in my curiosity, what am I going to do? I just opened it and I start reading. So I have, obviously, my father, and he has 2 sisters, just the 3 siblings. So in this journal, I find that they started to write all their walks with the Lord, probably like 25 years prior to the moment I was reading. So they were like in their 20s, but they were on fire for the Lord. They would go on mission trips. They would have prayer nights. They would go to villages and have evangelism there. They would play in the orchestra and compose songs for the Lord. So all 3 siblings were in love with the Lord 25 years prior. Nowadays, when I was 16, what did I see? Both my aunts and my father, none of them was walking with the Lord. They weren't reading their Bibles, like ever. They still had it in their heads, right? But they weren't reading their Bibles. They weren't going to the church. One of my aunts divorced in the meantime, and the other one didn't get married. And I said, Lord, what happened to these people that I'm reading in these journals about, that 25 years later, none of them, they act as if they've never known you. So I prayed when I was 16 that God would protect me so that 25 years from then, my niece, which was I at the moment, would not find my journals and I would be in the same situation. And she would ask, whatever happened to Aunt Anna, that she was so in love with the Lord and she would go on mission trips and do evangelism and this and that, and now she's acting as if she doesn't know the Lord. So I prayed that the Lord would protect my heart, that I would never get into that position. And I said, Lord, I don't know what caused them over the years, all three of them, to go astray, but protect my heart. I got to John 15. Probably like, I don't know, a couple of months later. And it says, abide in me, for apart from me, you can do nothing, right? And the Lord reminded me, remember when you were reading their journals? They did not abide in me. And abiding in me is a daily thing. So they have not gone astray all of a sudden, but little by little by little, their hearts grew colder and colder from me. Then I got to another verse in Matthew 13:22, when it says the seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. And the Lord reminded me when it says worries of this life of my father, because he was always worried to care for all his children and make sure there's bread on the table and whatnot. So he neglected the spiritual side. He stopped going to church because he's so tired and he needs the energy to go work more, and he would have all these side jobs and whatnot. So that was my father's case with the worries of the world. And one of my uncles, the one that divorced my aunt, and they remarried, actually. That's a happy story in the end, with a happy ending. Anyways, for him, it was the wealth of the world because he wanted to have more business and more wealth and more status. So he stopped going to church, too. So, and the other one was in 1 John 2:16. For everything in the world, the lust of flesh, the lust of eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. So the Lord again showed me, not only did they not abide in me, not only did they let the worries of life or the wealth of life choke the fruit, but also the lust of eyes, because my uncle started having affairs with other women, right? And again, the wealth and the pride of life. So my point is, when you walk with the Lord, he knows exactly to meet you where you are at and to answer your questions and have your faith grow stronger and stronger. I got, I need to finish with my 16. I get ahead of myself here. So I prayed when I was 16 for balance and wisdom. I realized that I only have one life to live, right? And I was trying to please everyone. So I went from the extreme of being so fearful because I could never, you know, kind of please everyone, to, Lord, I only want to please you. So I can have both. If I'm trying to please everyone, it's like my heart goes in 100 directions and I cannot please everyone. Are people different? Yes. Do they have different expectations? Yes, again. Can you please every single expectation and every single person? That would be like juggling with, I don't know, 100 plates or whatever. And I said no. When I turned 16, I said this, Lord, my only aim in life is to please you. And whoever you bring in my life, they will stick around. But if they're not supposed to be there, they can be on their way and I can be on mine. And I don't have to strive to please anyone else. Hopefully, I am a nice and kind person and people will stick around. But my point was, I want to please you with all my heart. And I prayed for wisdom because I have seen so much lack of it around me. And I said, Lord, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Please give me that wisdom so that I would number my days carefully and walk with you. I got baptized when I was 17. I don't know when everyone got baptized. I was yesterday at SIM banquet, and they were asking us this question, and we had to stand up and say, when did you come to know the Lord? Was it after you were 40 years old, or between 22 and 39, or prior to that, and whatnot? And they figured it out that most people come to know the Lord before the age of 22. There was like 76% of the people give their lives to the Lord before the age of 22. And 68% until the age of 18. And that was definitely my case, and my brother's case, and my sister's case, and my other brother's case. So in my family, I can testify to that. So for those of you that have any influence in children's life or in young people, keep on planting the seeds. To this day, I still remember what I was taught in Sunday school, right? So this is an encouragement for I'm not even going to start naming you, because a lot of you are volunteering in the church, but you know yourself. And not only at the church, right, with your neighbors and with your families and whatnot, keep on planting the seeds. God's word will not come back void. Got engaged at 18 so that everyone would know for sure that I will get married, and married when I was 19. We've seen the Lord's faithfulness over and over again over the years. So when we got married, I was in university, and he was unemployed, but I don't know if you're still in university. So basically, we had no money. So he had 10 conferences a year that he would translate for. So we had $1,000 a year, which paid just for our rent. That was it, for our utilities, because luckily that I had one aunt that was in the States, and my father was visiting with her, and she said, oh, I have this apartment in Bucharest, and nobody's been living in that apartment for 8 years. I just heard that Anna got married. Do you think she would like to move there? And my father said, well, let me ask her, but I suppose she would. So remember how I always prayed that God would provide a house and a husband that would be a pastor? He has always taken care of our house that we were going to live in, and eventually actually gave us our own apartment. So we lived in this 3-bedroom apartment for 2.5 years. We had one girl live with us for 2.5 years. She's a missionary now in New Zealand. We had another girl that lived with us for 1.5 years, and she was a missionary in Vietnam. We had another girl that stayed with us, and she was my classmate from university for 2.5 years. We had my brother when he was taking his finals, my sister when she was taking... So that house, I'm telling you, was such a blessing for many, because we realized we're broke. Other people are broke, so we might as well just open up the house for whoever needs a place to crash. So it was an interesting phase, right? Like some would stay up till 2 a.m, and the others needed to wake up at 5, and they would have the lights on, and these other ones, anyways, one wanted to play the guitar, and the other one would, you know, go to the washroom and not wash the tub and everything. Like, we had a lot of stuff. One of the girls came, and she said, what are the rules for this household? And I said, well, what do you mean? Like, we just respect each other and we love each other. I don't have rules per se. Well, after a couple of months, I had to come up with the rules. If you leave a room, switch off the light. Nobody's there. Why should we pay for the light that we have no money for in the first place? If, you know, you're washing dishes, don't leave the water running after you leave. Like, some of them were young people, so you had to be, like, very specific with the rules that you had for them. But we've seen the Lord's faithfulness. I remember one Christmas, we had no money for anything, not even for a tree. So we figured out, let's pray. Let's see what is God going to do. So that Christmas was the best Christmas ever. So we had the tree from the church, and they said, oh, well, just why leave it there to dry up and whatnot? I guess Adi and Anna could take it home. And we said, yes, we would. We totally would. So we got the tree at home. I think it was 5 or 6 of us living in the 3-bedroom apartment at the time. Each of us got a little bit of something under the tree. And I remember it was Christmas Eve, and we said, can we wait till, like, midnight so we can open all the presents and whatnot. So to this day, it's little things like that where we look back and we see the Lord provided for this, and the Lord provided for that, and the Lord provided for that. When I was pregnant, I was 21. Again, we had no money. You have to pay for the anesthesiologist, for the doctor, for this, for that. And I'm like, Lord, you know I have no money for anything, so I just bring it to you. So you please take care of it. So as I'm praying and resting my hand on my tummy and blessing my daughter, I felt the Lord saying, Anna, if you will wait, you will see my hand at work. And I said, Lord, if I don't trust you and I worry, nothing will change anyways. So I'll better trust you. I guess it's the better option. So there was this team from the States, and they came for 3 weeks, a short mission trip to Romania. I think it was 8 different cities to go to orphanages. Adi was busy at the time doing another translation. So he said, the only other person that I can recommend is Anna. I was 7 months along at the time. And I said, sure, if you get a 7 months along person with you and the only translator, I'm ready for the job. And I did. I went with them. At the end, they gave me $600 for the 3 weeks' time. I could buy a washing machine, because at that time, I was washing everything in my tub. I had no washing machine. So imagine a 7 months old, you know, bending over the tub and whatnot. So it was tough, right? And I said, Lord, thank you for the washing machine. Now, Adi suggested I would get a cell phone because I was in university. And if I was into labor, there was no way for him to find out. So he said, okay, let's get you like the basic cell phone so at least you could reach out and I could reach out to you. And because we went to all these orphanages, part of that team, and I actually keep in touch with some of the ladies in the States, and they always go on my Facebook, and they tell Emma, it was Emma's birthday in February, and they said, we know you since you were in your mother's womb, and you went with us everywhere and whatnot. So anyways, they left for me 2 crates filled with clothes until Emma was 4 years old. I didn't have to buy clothes for Emma. And baby powder, baby shampoo, lotions, everything that I needed. So remember how God said, if you would wait, you would see my hand at work? God did it. So I had all that I needed. And the money for the anesthesiologist and the doctor, I visited with that aunt that I told you she never got married. Eventually she did after that. Anyways, and she said, oh, come over. And I know you don't have any money, you know, to go to the hospital, and I'll give you $200. And then you will give it back to me whenever you can. And then she said, you know what? Never mind. Don't give it back to me anymore. So it's little things like that that strengthen your faith, that God provides, and he knows your needs, and he is right there to meet you. So I will finish with one practical thing, hopefully. So after I had Emma, I started to work. I finished university, so this is actually a funny story. I'll take 1 minute to say to you. I was pregnant, 9 months along, going to university, right? My due date was January 28th. My first exam was January 30th. I had 4 exams in that exam session. I just didn't feel like the baby was going to come. So what is Anna going to do? She's going to start studying for the exam. I did. And because I didn't have Emma on the 28th, I went to the exam on the 30th. And they start making the sign of the cross, like, what are you doing here? You're going to have the baby with us and whatnot. I took the first exam. The second exam was February 5th. Again, I didn't really feel like the baby was coming. So I started studying for the second exam. I took the second one as well. Had Emma on the 7th of February, and then took another exam on the 17th. So where there's a will, there's a way. My mom kept saying, now you're having a baby in university, you're not ever going to finish, and everything. I finished with all my classmates. It was good. God was faithful there as well. I started to work with Campus Crusade for Christ. So the minute I finished university, I get a phone call from my friends from Campus Crusade for Christ, and they said, oh, we heard that you've graduated. Would you like to come work with us? I said, yes, of course, like a Christian organization. Who wouldn't, right? That was my dream. So I started working with Campus Crusade for Christ, and that was probably the most fruitful period of my time. I want to read a verse, actually, from John 15, 16 and 17. These verses, actually, I quoted when I got baptized at 17 years old, and they are true to this day for me. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. And I said, Lord, I want to bring more fruit for you. And I was involved in the church. I did worship, I did Sunday school, and I did women's ministry, and I loved it all. But with Campus Crusade for Christ, it was even more practical, let's put it that way. I'm wearing a t-shirt, and it says four laws. Can you hear me? Concise and filled with scripture. And at the end of the presentation, which was probably like 10, 15 minutes, they had to make a decision. Okay, I can't really ignore Christ anymore, so what am I going to do about it? It was a good practical, it was probably the most fruitful time in my life. And I loved to see the Lord work through that. Skip forward, moving to Canada. This is probably where we've seen the Lord's faithfulness the most, but I'm not going to go into it because there's no time. What I want to leave with you is, first off, you matter. God knows you, and God has created you for such a time like this. Do you remember, like, back in Esther when, what's his name? Esther's uncle. Mordecai, he said, how do you know that maybe for such a time like this, God has placed you here? So God has placed each and every one of us for such a time like this. Why? Because we hold a treasure in these jars of clay. That's what it's called. Let me see if I find it for you. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. So each of us matters, and we hold this treasure. But if we keep it in these jars of clay and we don't let it shine out, will it make a difference? Not much. Not much. And what does, in Matthew, what does the Lord say? Don't cover your light. Or a city on a hill, you are able to see it. And the people will see the fruit in our lives. Basically, that's what we need to do. Be salt and be a light and let the fruit in our lives speak to those around us. And prompt them to ask, what is different about you? And then we can share our faith. I will finish with one verse that resonates with my heart, and I hope with yours too. I am praying, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. He has started a good work in each and every one of us. I assume all of us are Christians here. And for those that are not Christians yet, he is sending people out there, and us, we are his ambassadors, right, to the people in our lives, to let them know, so they become Christians. And when they are, and when we are, What the Lord has started in each and every one of us, He will complete. And that takes the pressure off of us a little bit, right? Because He is the one that's working. What did He say to Peter? You are Peter, and upon this rock, I will build my church. So it wasn't the apostles, really. Well, we have to make ourselves available, just like the apostles did, right? But it is not our work, it's His. So all we have to do is serve the Lord, and He will bring other people to Him, and He will bring the fruit. Make ourselves available. Abide in Him. Don't let yourselves be dragged into the wealth of the world or the worries of the Lord or the lust of the eyes or whatever I have mentioned before. Abide in Him every day and bring forth fruit that will last for the kingdom. Amen.